Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, what up? They eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is all fair, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta you show me if necessary. Homie, investors is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind to beauty of life. Was when my mom said, again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my D&P right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him. Little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training and difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina. Banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The army's a school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals I build. With dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, huh? The time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa. 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holsters. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. A black gorilla, crib and blood and one only. Just know my face, I be the case. But the wish at the police, they'll get the name Lake. Go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force. Of what we fight for, my heart goes to you beautiful wife in war.
Enlist and more and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule is strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer, right?
Yes.
And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see to that.
Oh.
him with Eric's.
Starring Gary Dordan from TV CSI.
This is the military, David.
Real live, real with Shanae and greetings. Welcome to another edition of Georgia University Radio, where our goal is a fivefold. Our first goal is to eradicate functional literacy among new African prisoners. Our second goal is to eradicate culture ignorance among new African prisoners. Our third goal is to try and criminal mentality to the new African mentality. We all do the educational means. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebuilding and stabilization of new African community. Well, our fifth goal is to prepare a new African prisoner for release, reducing new African recidivism. Now, overall goal and trying for the whole pre-industrial slave complex to the big institutional learning through educational means. Before I bring on our guest now, I'll go a couple of events that happened in history during this week. And I'm also your host, Boumana Shakir. On January the 8th through the 10th in 1811, Charles Delaunay led a slave revolt in Louisiana. Louisiana slaves rebelled in two parishes about 35 miles from North New Orleans. Revolt was prepared by the U.S. troops. This is without any doubt, large slave rebellion and revolt in American history. In 1863, President Lincoln told a Union general that he had tried for nearly a year and a half to keep from touching slavery, and it was still possible for whites to adopt a policy of gradualism and apprenticeship that would soften the impact of emancipation. 1867. Legislation giving the suffrage to New Africans in the District of Columbia was passed over President Andrew Johnson Verb. In 1912, the ANC, the African National Congress, which was African older liberation movement, was founded in Azania, South Africa. On January 9, 1866, Fisk University was established in Tennessee. Also in that same year, Russ College was established in Mississippi, and Lincoln College was established in Missouri. In 1922, the world witnessed the birth of Sekou Touré, president of Guyana, Africa. In 1946, poet County Collier died in New York City at the age of 42. In 1967, Representative Adam Clayton Powell Jr. ousted as chairman of the House Education and Welfare Committee on a charge of wrongfully appropriating congressional funds for racism. 1976, Lester B. Granger, former director of the National Urban League, died in Alexandria, Louisiana at age 79. On January 10, 1849, Congressman Abraham Lincoln proposed but never introduced a bill called a Fugitive Slave Law in the District of Columbia and the gradual emancipation of the slaves of the district. He was bitterly criticized for proposing to extend the Fugitive Slave Law to the nation's capital. In 1870, Georgia legislation reconvened and admitted black representatives and senators. In 1947, the world witnessed the birth of Amama Fenix Sekou, who was a Black Panther leader, a political activist, a former political prisoner, a lecturer, a businesswoman, and a Kaikou African citizen. In 1957, the SCLC, which is Southern Christian Leadership Conference, was organized. In 1966, Georgia legislature refused to seat SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, a Student National Coordinating Committee organized Julian Bond. In 2005, James Forman dies at age 78. James Forman was a revolutionary black nationalist, a former member of SNCC, and a former member of the Black Panther Wild Self-Defense. He also wrote extensively about reparations and other things. He's a political strategist. 1862, Lincoln fought the resignation of Secretary of War Simon Cameron, who had distributed a report calling for the use of a new African soldier. President Lincoln repudiated the suggestion and ordered all copies of the report recalled. In 1892, William D. McCoy, Indiana, was appointed minister to Liberia. In 1936, Charles W. Anderson would enter the lower house of Kentucky legislature. In 1961, a rebellion took place at the University of Georgia. Two new African students, Charlene Hunter and Hamilton Holmes, federal court ordered and reinstated. They returned to class on January the 16th. on January 12th, 1948. U.S. Supreme Court decision, Tiffield versus Oklahoma State Board of Regents, said the state must afford blacks an opportunity to commit study or law at a state institution at the same time as other citizens. In 1952, University of Tennessee admitted its first black student. Jean Gray was the first admitted. 1965, playwright Lorraine V. Hansberry, the author of Raising the Sun and other works, died in New York City at the age of 34. In 1970, the secession by Biafra province surrendered 31-month-old Nigerian Civil War. That struggle still continues to today in Biafra. January 13, 1869, the National Convention of Black Leaders met in Washington, D.C. Frederick Douglass was elected president. In 1943, Myra Adele Logan was the first woman to perform open-heart surgery, the ninth one ever done. She died on the same day on January 13, 1977. It happened on she performed the surgery in 1943. 1966, Robert C. Weaver, the first black cabinet member, now made Secretary of HUD. In 1970, in California, in Soledad, W.B. Nolan, Cleveland Edwards, and Albert Sweet Judd Miller were murdered by the pigs. That they are the first three martyrs of the Black August Resistance, known as the Black August Memorial. 1985, Jerome Holland, the first black on the New York Stock Exchange board director, died in New York City at the age of 69. In 1989, poet Sterling A. Brown died in Tacoma Park, Maryland at the age of 87. On January 14, 1868, assembly in the West with a black majority met in the Charleston Clubhouse with 76 black delegates and 48 white delegates. Two-thirds of the black delegates were former slaves. A New York Herald reporter wrote, "Here in Charleston is being enacted the most incredible, hopeful and yet unbelievable experiment in all of the history of mankind." Also, in 1868, North Carolina Constitutional Convention, 15 black, 118 white met in Raleigh. 1873, PBS Pinchback, elected to the U.S. United States Senate. So he had previously been elected to Congress. He went to Washington with unique distinction of being both a senator-elect and a congressman-elect. 1975, named Secretary of Transportation by President Ford. He was the second black to hold a cabinet position. In 1981, James Franks, president of Lincoln University, Missouri, installed the first black president of the National Collegiate Athletic Association, NCACA. You know, those are a couple of events happening in history this week. But, you know, there are more, but the show must go on. You know, Georgia University is an educational platform, and our goal is to inspire you and motivate you to make a change in your community, make a change with yourself. You know, tonight on the show, we're going to be talking to brother Prophecy, known as Yayra Amandi. I'd like to welcome on the show tonight, brother Yayra. Free to learn, brother. How you doing?
Brother, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. I can hear you, brother.
Okay, all right, man. Hey, first of all, big ups on that. You, in the beginning, you said you was going to say a couple of things, you know, talk about a couple of things that happened this week in history. Comrade, you just dropped a whole semester worth of knowledge, man, that quick. I wish I had a pen and pad before I was writing that down.
Well, hey, we got to steer education, man. You know, educated for liberation, so there's no other way around that. No, it was definitely a little bit. You know, other things happened in history that week as well, but that was just some, you know. So
I was like, I'm looking at that. I'm like, dang, did comrade just list everything that black people did on this week? But that's what's up, man. That's what's up. That's why you know what I'm saying, you are who you are. You're doing what you're doing, and we appreciate it. First of all, I want to say thank you for inviting me to this platform, man. It's truly an honor. You know what I'm saying? Cause I know yesterday when you had called me and you were like saying, you know, I was like saying, man, I'm honored, you know, and you like saying, well, man, I'm just a regular guy. I'm like, nah, brother, you not not just a regular guy, man. You in engaging in nation building and trying to free the minds of our brothers and sisters who've been have that colonized mindset, and we trying to build a better nation, and build a better world, really, man. And you engaging in it. When we get when we free the land, comrade. In the history book been writing, your name gonna be in there as one of the brothers who helped to free the minds of our people so we could do the things that we need to do in order to gain our true liberation. So I want to say personally, sincerely, thank you, brother.
I appreciate it, brother. I thank you for all your efforts and the continued effort that you're doing as well, brother. It precipitated.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You know,
appreciate you.
No doubt. You know, then first of all, I thank you for coming to our platform to show you another understanding. And also, thanks for doing the work you're doing in the past, the present, work you're doing in the future. And while you pop the thing off, we want to tell the people a little bit about yourself so they can know exactly who's talking and who you are. Tell the people about yourself.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So my name is Yera Amadi, also known as Brother Prophecy. I'm a film director. I do a whole lot of things. I do a whole lot of things, but ultimately I'm a new African revolutionary nationalist. And I just happen to have a big old skill set. I do like film directing, propaganda, host podcasts. I started a new African Broadcast Association called NABA, along with other comrades from Idlewild City. And we basically try to do the same thing, try to follow the footsteps of you, comrade, and trying to educate the uneducated, re-educate the miseducated, and, you know, spread information on nationalism and independence. I create urban gardens, community gardens, and, man, I do a whole bunch of stuff, man. I do a whole bunch of stuff. But, you know, mainly everything I do, I think it was John Henry Clark who said, "You whatever your skills and your talents are, use them in service of the race." So it's just like whatever I know how to do, I try to utilize that to help free our minds and free us in a nation build. So, you know, ultimately, I'm just a new African revolutionary nationalist.
Indeed. You know, that's a lot that you're doing, man. We commend you. We appreciate your efforts. Emery,
no
your
problem.
Name. No doubt. What does your name mean? What does the Yera Amadi mean? What does that mean?
Okay, so my actual full name is Yera Amadi Kentiji Tomi. And that means son warrior that is loyal and keeps his word to the people. I got that in the naming ceremony. I ain't named that myself, you know. It's a mouthful, but yeah, it's like son warrior that is loyal and keeps his word to the people. So yeah.
Okay. What language is that?
It's actually a combination of languages. It's some Swahili, one South African. I mean, honestly, I got to look all of them up, you know. So I mean, I'm taking the individual who gave me that name. I'm guessing they thought a lot into my name, you know. So
okay.
It come from multiple places.
Well, the African names are very significant in regard to the transformation of one's mind, you know. So it represents you trying from coming out of European mind to an African way of thinking, an African way of thinking. You know, What exactly does the term brother prophecy mean? Are you a prophet or something? Prophesizing? Or what does that mean?
You know, ever since I've been out and about, you the first person who actually asked me that. And I actually appreciate that, you know. But so, okay, I got the name prophecy. One, because back in the day I was an artist. Well, I was a rapper when I was like in high school, college, and I later became a poet. But I actually...
Okay.
I've always been somebody who do critical analysis, and when you do like a critical analysis, and when you are a critical thinker, you analyze things, and you can actually predict something that's gonna happen. You know what I'm saying? Just by looking, it ain't got nothing to do with nothing religion, ain't got nothing to do with no spookism or anything like that. It's just I used to be like, you know, just look at things and be like, damn, it seemed like this gonna happen, you know, and I predict things that's about to happen. I still do that, you know what I'm saying, but it's all based on critical analysis of the information of objective reality, you know, concrete conditions. And I just started, you know, saying, dang, you know, I think what really nailed it was when George Bush became president when he beat George Bush, or when he beat Al Gore in that election. I was like, man, it feels like that Al Gore will get more election, will get more votes, but I just think that some kind of way they're gonna make sure that George Bush get in there, because it just seemed by just how everything was folding out that, you know, they really wanted him to be in there. And if you remember, that's when Gore had more votes, but they actually put George Bush in because of from the Supreme Court. You know, they used to call them President Select. And then they was like, damn, bro, you a prophet, you know. And it just kind of stuck, you know. But no, that's all it was. There's nothing really fancy. Just, you know, I just made a couple of predictions that was correct, and people started calling me a prophet. And, you know, from prophet, it just evolved to prophecy.
Okay. That's a beautiful thing, man. That's a beautiful thing, man. When the people recognize you as such and recognize you as a name, that somebody is a beacon of light who can inspire, that's a beautiful thing, man. Because it's just like,
That turn,
mm-hmm. they call Nat Turner the prophet. You know, they call him the prophet. He didn't call himself today. No, he called him the prophet. You know,
yeah.
Like
Conrad
Jordan said, that fascism is here. You know, he had talked about fascism being here during his time, and now we see the fascism is really here for real. You know,
mm-hmm.
For his critical analysis, you know what I'm saying? Dialectic material with his scientific mind state. You know, so it's a beautiful thing, man. It's all with encouragement, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate you asking me that question, because you're like the first person who ever asked me that question. I was, you know, I'll be thinking, I've been called that so long that I don't even think about it. But, you know, when I reflect, and I was like, okay, I'm out there and I'm doing podcasts and people see my name, and I know, you know, they got to have a question, be like, you know what, is he some kind of religious, you know, fanatic or whatever and all that, you know, but nobody ever asked me. So I appreciate you asking me. That's my first time ever explaining it publicly.
True indeed. You know, I understand that you're the CEO of Liberated Films, right? What exactly is Liberated Films, and where did the name come from? What a sniff of that name.
So, okay, Liberated Films is a film company, and I do film. You know, I've been doing film ever since I was in high school, just figured out how to do it. And, you know, as technology grew, so did I grow. And doing them, and, you know, I got bigger and better in films, and it actually, you know, came to a point where people started paying me to do videos, weddings, and all of this type of thing. And I actually did a documentary. When I first came to Ida B. Wells City, I met a brother by the name of Elbert Big Man Howard. Now, Elbert Big Man Howard was one of the original six members of the Black Panther Party.
True indeed.
Matter of fact, if you Google like original six member of the Black Panther Party, you'll see Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seals, the Hutton brothers, and like Elbert Big Man Howard, he'll be kind of like in the back, you know, big dude, big dark skinned brother. But I met him, he was an elder at the time, and he had like a Black Panther button on, and I was like saying, oh, you know, you know what you know about them, you know, they're my heroes and all that. And he's just like, well, you know, I was one of the original six members, and he just started dropping knowledge, you know, all kind of just valuable knowledge about it. And, you know, at the time, I used to play with film. I used to just do film for fun. But, you know, I was like starstruck, really, you know what I'm saying, because I was like, man, this one of the original Panthers, you know, like, dang. So I asked him, I was like, man, you want me to do a documentary for him? And, you know, we got together, spent a whole lot of time. He actually introduced me to, like, the guy who pulled me into the New African Independence Movement, General Hamisha. But ultimately, I got a lot of knowledge from this brother. We did a documentary. He moved back to California, took the documentary with him, because I was just like, man, I don't charge nothing. I don't want nothing from it. But, you know, just, you know, thank you for your service. And, you know, he did a couple of things with the documentary. And, like, ultimately, that's when I kind of got serious with that, because I kind of got some props from doing, because it was well done. People didn't expect the quality of his documentary to be that much. So, you know, it's like I needed a name. And it first was Liberation Films. But when I looked up Liberation Film, somebody already had Liberation Film, who was kind of doing similar things, or at least in a similar conscious community. So yeah, I just slipped into Liberated Films.
True indeed. You know, in regard to that, some of the fun facts about that situation that you used that name, Big Man Howard was the Deputy Minister of Information. He also was a propagandist.
Yep.
But he also was an ancestor of High Misha's cousin. You know, he also was cousin.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
First cousin.
So you familiar. See, look at you. That, man, you know everything, comrade. That's what's up. So yeah. You absolutely correct. He was Deputy Minister of Information. Matter of fact, we used to go because he was old school. You know, we'll go to the library and he'll just dig up all kind of resources from the library. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't no internet with that brother. He was just, you know. But I mean, I missed that ancestor. He was a good brother. We became, you know, really close friends with that time that I spent with him, and I learned a whole lot, especially about the Panther, about, you know, how they would go out into the community and basically poll the people, converse with the people and see what the needs of the people were. And then they come back and see what's feasible and say, okay, this is how we can meet the needs. And it's really their interaction with the people, which made them popular and beloved by the people, which, you know, made them as successful what they were. And that inspired me, you know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that's what's up, man. But, yeah. Am I still on?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. But, yeah, that's kind of how I started doing film. With Big Man and really how I got into the New African Independence Movement. And that was like, I want to say that was like probably the mid to late 90s when that happened.
Okay.
It was over 20 years ago.
Well, that's a good time. You know, in regards to being a propagandist, right, how exactly does doing the film correlate with being a propagandist? How do you use it to propagate? And what is your definition of a propagandist?
Propaganda is somebody who is using the form of communication in order to influence people or spread a message about a particular organization or ideology or movement or something like that. You know, that's like a definition off the top of my head. It ain't, you know. So, you know, excuse me if it's inaccurate on any ways. But, yeah, that's kind of what a propagandist do. You know, and I use film. I utilize anything I do, you know, my spoken word. Back when I used to be a rapper, and I still dip and dab into rap music, but I'm an old dude, so I ain't just really trying to be no rapper. But, yeah, when I do spoken word or just speak or in a podcast, you know, it's always to spread. And now the ideas and concepts of independence, you know, the ideology of the New African Independence Movement. So, I mean, and the thing about it is, I think – matter of fact, I need to post some of my films because I be doing so many different things that, like, parts of what I do get neglected. And I'm just realizing, I'm like, man, I got some films that's really dope. Matter of fact, I'm going to post one called Stand Your Ground. I did this a long time ago with my comrades from this group called Brothers Keeper. And it was dealing with police brutality from a different perspective. You know what I'm saying? Like, just posing the thought, be like, what if – you know, when the police pulled up, we was the one that feared for our life. And we took things in our own hand. You know what I'm saying? And I ain't going to give away the whole ending of it, but you can pretty much figure out, you know, where I'm going with that. So, yeah, I'm going to have to post that, let everybody see that, see some of my film work. But, I mean, film is extremely powerful because film has a way of really telling you, you know, how to think about something. You know what I'm saying? It betrays things in a certain way. Cause like the dynamics of film and understanding film structure and how to write, you can basically make people feel any kind of way about any type of thing. Like basically you can write a film that has a protagonist as being a Ku Klux Klan member, a white supremacist. And we looking at that and we, if the film is well done, we will sympathize with the Ku Klux Klan member. You know what I'm saying? You will sympathize with whatever because, like, film structure, they do, like, certain mental hacks It's things that a good film actually does to draw you in. It's scientific. You know what I'm saying? That's one thing I study about filmmaking and propaganda in general, like how to draw people in, like especially with the protagonist, because early in the film, I don't care what film you're looking at, early in the film, something about that protagonist, the main character, is going to draw you in to them. You're either going to feel sympathetic with them or you're going to like them or something. It's something. But a good film, one of the things they do is, as soon as possible, they got to make you have an emotional connection with the main character. That's a goal of it. They teach you that in film school. So it's film have the power to really make you feel any kind of way about any kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? And like, in fact, that's one reason I like to kind of go over movies because they are just real powerful. And propaganda, I mean, think about this. The first blockbuster film in America was Birth of a Nation. This movie was about the Klan. You know what I'm saying? Black people free from enslavement. We just running wild, killing folks, want to rape the white woman and all this kind of stuff. In a dramatic scene, you know, a black dude who was played by a white man in blackface running after this white woman, and she go to the edge, and she looking at the black man, and she saying, well, you know what, I'd rather die than get raped by this big old jigaboo nigga or whatever, you know what I'm saying, and jump out and commit suicide. You know what I'm saying? And that emotionally connected with the audience, like saying, nah, we got to do something. And they go Rise of the Klan, the protagonists, the heroes.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And this movie was so popular, it was shown in the White House, comrade, the White House, first blockbuster. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, literally, we've been like the victims of a 500-year propaganda campaign. You know what I'm saying? Because when you think about it, you know, the first war campaign that you have is a propaganda campaign. You know, before they went to war with Iraq in Afghanistan, you know, they weren't, you know, the Iraqis and the Afghanis, they were no longer just Muslims. They were terrorists. You know, before they took the land of the indigenous people here, they were savages, godless savages. Before they enslaved African people, you know, we were these uncivilized barbarians. You know, so it's like the first campaign of war that is waged on the people, even before any bullet is shot. It's a propaganda campaign because they have to dehumanize the individuals that they're going to war with so they can justify the things that they're going to do to them. And that's what's happened to us. You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, a lot of us in the mainstream society buy into the propaganda. We believe it ourselves. We see ourselves through the eyes of the European colonizers who have waged this propaganda campaign on us. That's why it's like so easy for us to dehumanize ourselves. You know, that's why a lot of the self-destructive behavior that we see in our community exists. That's why, you know, like I said, the work that you're doing, the work that I'm doing, the work that we're doing is so important, because it's like we got to counteract all of that craziness, all of that foolishness. You know what I'm saying? Not only that. Not only do we have to counteract it, but we got to instill in our people the enough self-esteem, enough belief that we'll know that we deserve to have something of our own. You know what I'm saying? Because that's one thing that this conditioning, this propaganda has done to us. It has made us believe that we are not worthy of having a nation of our own. We are not worthy of being able to do for self. Man, you know, interesting thing. One of your facts was, you know, during this week was the founding of a college called Rust College in Mississippi. Specifically, it's Holly Springs, Mississippi. That's my hometown. That's where I'm from. A couple of years ago, I went and I spoke to the students at Rust College. Now, I'm speaking about new African independence. I'm speaking about the need for land, about independence, about all of that, you know, good stuff that I'm thinking, well, damn, these college students, they ought to be able to, you know, resonate with, you know, with some of this. And the response that I got was heartbreaking. They weren't negative, but it was more like a shock because I was telling them something so radical to them. They was commenting on, you know, things like, but we need white people. We just need white people. And I'm thinking, I'm like, what the hell do we need white people for? You know what I'm saying? What you need us for? To lock us up, to shoot us in the street, to murder us, to poison our community, to miseducate us? What the hell do we need white people for? Because, like, the reality of it is, these European people the colonizer, these exploiters have been utilized, have been using us for exploitation and building their nation for over 400 years. And our work, our blood, our sweat and tears have made this country the richest, most powerful nation in the world. So the reality is, we don't need white people. White people need us. You know what I'm saying? But it was really just heartbreaking to hear college students talk like that. You know what I'm saying, comrade? That's why, like, a couple of weeks ago, during the Kwanzaa season, on that Thursday, Ujima, I was so happy to talk to the prisoners, to the inmates, because the level of consciousness and the level of political awareness that the inmates had was, I mean, it was up there. You know, I ain't have no stupid questions from them. You know what I'm saying? I was like, man, that's what I'm talking about. You know, so, comrade, I don't even know what the question you was asking, but film and all that stuff is extremely important as far as propaganda is concerned. You know, it really influences the minds of the people. It controls it, and it makes people think in certain directions. You know.
You answered the question from a good perspective, man. A very good perspective. You know, I understand that you found a New African Broadcast Association, right? What actually
yes,
is the
sir.
Purpose of New African Broadcast Association and for see some of the show, listen in, and what exactly is on the broadcast?
All right, man, I appreciate you asking me that question. You asked some good questions, comrade. So we started the New African Broadcast Association to really help consolidate people who was really trying to spread the word about independence and the New African independence movement and trying to be more effective in doing it. You know what I'm saying? Because, you know, we always talk about collectivity and doing things together. And yeah, honestly, man, I'm like one of them dudes who usually just ride solo. I'm kind of, you know, I'm comfortable by myself, you know. But I was like, you know what? I see individuals doing stuff, especially if we all in the same neighborhood, same community, let's pull everything together. And I really got to give props to this brother by the name of Patrick Alexander. He is founder of this organization called the Black Liberation Movement in Mississippi. Actually, me and his brother go back like long time, like over 20 years, good brother. And he was telling me about like an app that allows you to do high quality podcasts, video podcasts. And he, you know, he turned me on to it, and he was like, comrade, you know, I know how you do things, especially with this film, so I know in about a month you're going to master that jump. And I was like, all right, you know, I'm going to try. And, man, you know, when I got to it, figured out how to do it, you know, it was like the rest is really kind of history. You know, at that point, I'm like, hey, sir, Mama Ayo, we finna do it like this. Because at first we had a show of New African Perspectives. We was pre-recording it and just putting it on YouTube, you know. But I think some of my computer went down, and I was like, we couldn't do it for a while because I couldn't edit it. And I was just like, we finna do this. We finna do it live and interact with the people. And I hollered at comrade Atiba because Atiba used to call me and talk for like 2-3 hours at a time. Every time Atiba called me, we would talk for like 2 and 3 hours. So I'm like, you know what? Because I used to feel really ashamed, not ashamed, but I feel guilty because we have so many dynamic conversations that I was like, man, these conversations need to be shared with the people. You know, I feel like I'm being selfish just having these conversations between me and Atiba and everybody else ain't involved in it. You know what I'm saying? Because that's just how we do. But when I had that, found that that app and figured out how to do a podcast, I was like, comrade, we finna get a show. We finna do the exact same thing that we do every day. Just when we chatting it up, we gonna do that for the people. And, you know, things just started to develop. So right now we have 5 broadcasts to go on through the week. On Mondays, we have with Sama Ott, myself, and Mama Ayodele. And Sama Ott, that's the president of the Republic of New Africa. Mama Ayodele, that's the vice president. And me, I'm just a dude who like doing shows. But we got a show called The New African Perspective. And it airs at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And you can look at our stuff on this, if you're on Facebook, just do a search for N period A period B period A period novel. And it'll come up, and just join the page. You know, it ain't no obstacles or anything. You ain't even got to get approved. It's an open page, so you can go in and you can join it, and you can see, you know, all our broadcasts. But Mondays, New African Perspective, 1 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Tuesdays, we have the Foundation of the Nation, and that's strictly with Mama Ayo and Sama Ott. You know, they do their thing. They talk about a lot of things from a different perspective of things that, you know, a lot of the traumas and a lot of issues, things to deal with the family, a lot of personal things that we need to overcome within our communities. So they're doing that Tuesdays at 10 o'clock. And then on Thursdays, we had conversations between comrades. It was me and my comrade Atiba. And Atiba ain't on the show right now for things I ain't just going to mention right now, but matter of fact, right before I came on air here, I was on the phone with him, and he said he going to be back, and he going to be stronger, and he ready. He can't wait, you know, to get back at there. And so he doing well, but we have conversation between comrades, and it's an outstanding show, man. We just basically be chopping it up and dialoguing with the people. And what's that? Friday, we got a blog talk show. They're like, yo, a blog talk show with a Melly Queen. She has a Truth and Power Corner, and that is at 5 o'clock. And then 5 o'clock Central Time. Sundays, we have the Voices of New Africa with our elder Fadali and my comrade Kakai and myself. We talk about a lot of different things. So we got something going on all during the week. And we actually planning on adding a show that deals with music, New African, our conscious music. You know, we can shine a spotlight on this. As a matter of fact, it's a comrade that I got, a rapper who big into the New African Independence Movement, that I need to holler at and see if he want to host the show. I ain't going to say his name yet because he might say no, and then I just, you know, got people excited for nothing. But yeah, we're trying to add a show that's going to highlight the entertainment side of, you know, the struggle, you know, people who are promoting the type of music and content, whether it's poetry, R&B, or rap, or reggae, whatever it is, you know, trying to, cause entertainment is important too, you know what I'm saying? That's a big thing that has happened with the propaganda nowadays, because the music that is promoted for black people has been 100% weaponized against us, you know what I'm saying? And that's something serious we gotta deal with too. That's like a major problem we got to deal with. So, you know, we're trying to create a platform where artists can go and promote, you know, good conscious music that will uplift our people, bring us higher, elevate us, instead of pulling us down to a place where we glorify and murdering each other and taking drugs and doing things that are self-destructive to our movement, our people, our community, nation, and race. And I'm also in works in developing a show called Stronger Together, showing the parallels between the Chicano movement and the New African movement. Because interesting thing, since I've done this broadcast, a lot of people who are part of the Chicano community actually just love our show. I mean, like, just love them to death. I ain't even understand it, you know what I'm saying? And I was like, and I've been learning a lot about their particular struggle, and their particular struggle was heavily influenced by the Black Panther Party. And when I listen to them, they sound a lot like us as far as like the enemy is concerned. So I was like, man, I think it'll be a very educational thing as we can talk about the parallels between our struggle, you know, because we got, you know, this Caucasian white power structure has wreaked havoc all over the planet, you know what I'm saying? And it's a saying, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. Well, damn, them folks got a lot of damn enemies. So, you know, eventually we got to the point where we make these alliances. So, you know what I'm saying? When we go out and wage war and trying to get free the land and struggle against this beast, we have, you know, our pieces on the chessboard in place. You know, but if you want to see our broadcast, you can go to the NABA page, NABA, And you can check them out at any time. You know, they always going to be loaded on there. And you can go live. It usually will be on the novel page live. And if you're my friend on Facebook, it's also going to be posted on my page, too. And I try to post them in different areas, too, you know, on different pages, like maybe the New African Independence Movement and just whatever, you know. It depends on what I got going on in time, because a lot of times I got to play host. And I got to also be the producer of the show. And if any kind of issues, sound, or whatever come up, I got to fix them, you know, live on the spot. So I try to, you know, push it out and promote it and, you know, try to post it live if I can, if I got time to do it. But, you know, if you get an opportunity to see it, check it out, man. It's real fun. Because really, man, all we do is we just have fun, man. That's what it is. We educate, we dropping the information, we spreading, you know, the propaganda, we spreading the ideology and all of that good stuff. But mainly, man, we having a good time together, conversing with each other. And I always say our listening audience is the most politically advanced listening audience, you know, in the land, because I'm reading the comments, and the comments are like, dang, better than the show. I'm like, dang, you know, it's like a show within the show. So it's a good time. So if you have not had the opportunity to check it out, man, just check us out, man. You enjoy it. We have a good time. It's more like a family. I feel like it's a family. Like, I feel like I just gain a whole lot of friends when I do this show, because, you know, a lot of the people who come on there all the time, I feel like, you know, we on first name basis. Like y'all just my buddies, you know. So.
Oh, okay. No doubt. You know, also tell the people how can they access some of the shows on YouTube if they were to go on YouTube. How can they access certain things on YouTube as well regarding some of the shows?
I can check them out on YouTube. You know what? So, I do post them on YouTube too. I forgot I'd be doing that, you know, because when I, you know, they select the places that I want to post, and YouTube be a place that I post. I don't get just a whole lot of engagement on YouTube, but yeah. So I have a channel. Dang, what's the name of my channel? I be doing so much, I be forgetting. I have a YouTube channel, my personal channel. It used to be my Liberated Films channel, but I just post some of everything on there now. I think you can go to The Prophecy at YouTube at The Prophecy, and I should come up, and you can get access to all of my videos, all of the past things that I've done, some of the documentaries that I've done, some of the films that I've done, some of the music videos. And that's kind of the I made a mistake. I just used my personal YouTube channel to post everything that I did, you know, even if that includes the stuff that I did with my company, Liberated Films. So, man, 1 minute on one video, it might be a wedding. Another video, it might be some kind of revolutionary documentary. And another video, it might be some kind of rap video talking about all kind of stuff that I don't even advocate, you know? So I kind of made, so, you know, if you on my channel and you see, like, hold on, it don't even fit. You know, it's just something that I did with my business. But I'm kind of moving away from doing, like, music videos and all of that type of stuff. And I'm kind of, you know, moving away from just using my film as an avenue for funds and just more so using it as an avenue of propaganda. Because a lot of times when I'm using film to make money, you know, I kind of got to take the business, you know, wherever it comes from. And, it, you know, just to be honest, I got sick and tired of doing a lot of these stupid-ass rap videos just promoting death and destruction to our people. You know, so, like, I literally stopped doing it, man, you know. I, you know, mainly focus on, you know, doing stuff that liberates the people. Only time I do a video, if it's somebody I know that's spitting some kind of, you know, something that's uplifting to the people. And half the time, if I do that with them, I don't even just charge them like that, you know. But, you go to the Prophecy, DAPROPHECY, you know, on YouTube, and my page should come up, I think.
Okay, yeah. I know you mentioned the New African Independent Movement. You mentioned the New African Revolutionary Nationalists. For the people who are listening, explain here about what the New African Revolutionary Nationalists is and tell them what the New African Independent Movement is to the people who are listening who don't know.
Okay, New African Revolutionary Nationalists. Break that down. So New African, in 1968, a group of our elders and ancestors, who are individuals who are now ancestors, basically the who's who of the black nationalist movement of the time. At the time, 1968, they got together and they had a government conference, for a 3-day conference at the end of March. And there they decided that they would be advocating for an independent, sovereign black nation. They will ultimately be called the Republic of New Africa. So when we say New African, it's actually a nationality, you know. So when I say, when we say New African, that means that, you know, are we advocating for nation, the nation of New Africa. We're trying to bring about the New African, which we identify the five states that y'all know everybody here about here talking about all the time. A New African Revolutionary Nationalist means I'm an individual who is striving and struggling to bring that nation into existence. And when they say revolutionary, that just means I'm serious about it. You know, if necessary, we got to fight for it, then, you know, that's what I'm willing to do. So in a nutshell, that's what a New African Revolutionary Nationalist, somebody who's fighting to bring about the New African independent nation right here, you know, in North America. And that's why everything I do, you know, regardless to what it is, like I said, you know, I do martial arts. You know, I teach martial arts in different units. You know, I do gardens. Community gardens. I create community gardens in the neighborhoods with the people, and I use that as a avenue to talk to the people about the need to have your own land, to produce your own food, to do, be self-sufficient, you know. So when I do film, I create, you know, new films that talk about our struggle and the contradictions within this system, and ultimately to put it on people's minds that we need to get out of this system and do something for ourselves. So it's like everything I do, comrade, everything is geared toward the liberation of our people, to building a better nation, a build a nation, because I honestly believe, comrade, that if we can build a nation, we can gain our independence, you know what I'm saying, and get out of the yoke of this system of imperialism, white supremacy. You know what I'm saying? Not only will we create a better condition for ourselves, but we will ultimately lead to a better reality and a better world, period. Because the whole world is looking at America, because America has wreaked havoc over the whole world. They've exploited the entire world. You know what I'm saying? They oppressed the whole world. It's I was looking at a brother in Africa, and he was saying a lot of people wondering when all the tribes of Africa going to unite, you know, and start having all the divisions. And he said the reality is over in America, all the tribes of Africa are already there in America. Like, we're all in America. So as soon as the black people in America, new African people in America unite, then all the tribes have already united. So it's like the whole world is looking for us because we are within the belly of the beast. You know what I'm saying? And they like, they far over there and they can't even reach it. You know, they getting hit by drones, but we right here. I remember in 1995 when I was at the Million Man March, and I remember, you know, just hearing word from other nations saying, you know, saying how proud they were of us and how the whole world was waiting on us black people in America to wake up, because once we wake up, then it shakes the whole world. So it's like, you know, when I be saying, you know, how much I appreciate you, comrade, I sincerely mean it, because the work that we doing has the potential to change the whole damn world. And it is just so serious, comrade, you know. I don't even remember what your question was, but I just be kind of getting on tangent.
It's all good, man. It's all good to express yourself, man. I actually went with a New African Independent Movement, you know. So you asked what New African Revolution, actually, asked what a New African Independent Movement was as well. For the people who didn't know,
New African Independence Movement. That's the movement. It's like a umbrella movement of individuals and organizations that are striving to bring about the existence of an independent black nation right here in North America. So it's like the umbrella like movement name of the like collective movement of the organizations who, you know, that's a part of like a New African Independent Movement. We're all trying to gain independence from this European imperialistic nation. So, yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
True indeed. True indeed. It's a beautiful thing. You know, like you said, New York Indian Movement consists of various organizations, cadre, collective, unit, cells, families, you know, structures, you know. And
exactly.
My next question is, when you hear the name George Jackson, what does that signify to you when you hear the name George Jackson? What does that mean to you when you hear the name George Jackson?
Dang, comrade. You're getting them hard questions, ain't you? Comrade George Jackson, man, a true revolutionary, a true freedom fighter, somebody who understood what's necessary in order to gain our freedom, somebody who wasn't afraid to give his life and, if necessary, take a life. You know what I'm saying? A true soldier, comrade, a brother who had the ideology, the philosophy, had everything on point, and really, you know, left a foundation with others, you know, for us to pick up and follow, to actually bring into existence the thing that we're struggling for. You know what I'm saying? You know, a dude who had the political awareness, and I mean, his politics was so on point. You know what I'm saying? And you know, especially somebody who really shed the light on the movement inside the camps, you know, because like I think you said earlier in one of the goals that you set for your, you know, organization, the radio show, is to turn these, you know, prison camps into our own training facilities, you know, our own educational facilities, you know, because like I said, when I was talking to the brothers in prison, it was like, man, the level of political awareness, you know, the level of consciousness within the prison system is off the charts. You know, I always say that some of our most brilliant, our most talented, our strongest warriors are locked up inside the camp, and that ain't no accident, comrade. That ain't no accident. It was designed. A tactic of war is to cut off the head so the body can't survive. And historically, within the new African community and new African family, the black man has historically been the protector, the leader, the provider, and guide for the new African family. So if you cut off the protector and the leader and the guide from the family, if you take it, remove them, then the community is left vulnerable. That's why, like, just about anything that comes down the pipe that they want to put come down the pipe with, it hit our community with very little resistance. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like the warriors ain't there. We either been, you know, locked up or so miseducated that we don't understand how to properly respond to a threat. So, like I said, that's why it goes back to propaganda. It goes back to re-educating people and educating people, you know, because, like, once we get our heads right, you know, we understand exactly what must be done, then a lot of the bullshit to go in our community going to stop, you know, because we going to stop it.
True indeed, man. You know, it's about doing the work,
Yeah.
It's like you spoke about earlier, you know, when you look at different struggles, the first thing to be created is a propaganda unit, you know what I'm saying, a propaganda cadre. Like the end, you know what I'm saying, like the propaganda cadre go through and bring everybody the awareness to, heighten everybody political awareness. And then when they come back, they see, they find out who agitated, who had problems with the issue, and when they come back, that they're out and propagate, then when they come back again, then it got people who are ready to join, ready to organize, ready to do the work. You know, that's the base of a tool of propagation. It's like history. History is a weapon that we utilize to liberate ourselves, and it also is a weapon that we utilize to enslave us mentally and physically. You know, we get a physical standpoint. You know, that's the reality of it. That's what I say, history is a weapon, which is true. You know, but our story can be a remnant to that weapon, and also be a solution to our problem because we're solutionaries. So my next question is, political education.
Say that one more time.
How important is political education?
Man, political education is at utmost important. Man, because like a lot of times we get wrapped up in emotionalism. You know what I'm saying? The other things that ain't really going to bring about the results that we need. You know what I'm saying? I look at things, and my master teacher taught me to look at everything from a scientific point of view. do a critical analysis of concrete condition, a critical analysis of objective reality, to break it down, you know, like that to its lowest form. Because that's the way you actually going to solve problems. You know, a lot of people, we like talking about problems, like just talking about it. And we got a lot of people who got really good at talking about the problem, you know, to the point that, you know, people will follow you because you can articulate the problem in such an eloquent way. But then, you know, they don't understand how to talk about the solution. And then they never get to the solution because we always busy talking about the problem. So that's where the political education comes in, because when you are politically aware, not only are you talking about the problem, you're analyzing the source of the problem, the root of the problem. You understand the systems in place that create the conditions in which we're going through, you know. And it's not about emotionalism. A lot of people walk around and we'll just be like, man, white people just hate us. They just hate us. They just want us to die, not understanding it. Nah, the white people ain't about hate. The hatred of us is a manifestation or a byproduct of a system that is built on the exploitation of us. You know what I'm saying? The hate came about as a justification for our exploitation. But the reality is, these motherfuckers don't hate us. They really secretly love the hell out of us because we don't make them rich and powerful and influential and all of this type of stuff. You know what I'm saying? And the hatred and the brutality and all of that is a method that is being used, employed in order to prevent us from being that threat to their livelihood and a threat to their status quo. So they implement repressive measures in order to keep us down, to make sure that we don't overstep the position in which they've carved out for us in their society, under their white power structure. So it's like understanding, being politically aware allows you to see all of those things, to see where the problem actually lies, because the purpose of identifying a problem is not so you can talk about the problem. The purpose of identifying a problem is to find a solution to the problem. So, yeah, man, being politically aware, man, is extremely important. It's very, if we actually talking about freeing the land, we actually talking about bringing about a nation, we came by do it by just being emotional, being I hate white man and all of this, whatever, you know what I'm saying? We got to do serious critical analysis and understand how this system works, understand its strength, understand its weaknesses, understand how to attack it, understand how it's going to attack you, how to counter all of that, all of those things. You know what I'm saying? We got to be strategic. We got to understand the science of politics, the science of war, the science of all of that. You know, I yield on that.
Sure, indeed. It's understanding over to it. What exactly is the role of propaganda in college development? What's the role of propaganda in college development?
In the development of cadres.
Yeah, what I said is that what is the role of propaganda in cadre development?
In cadre development. I'm trying to make sure I understand exactly what you're asking me.
Yeah. What's the role? What's the role of propaganda in cadre development?
Trade development.
From your own perspective, you know, everybody had their own perspective, you know what I'm saying, perspective of things, you know, their own experiences also.
Yeah. I mean, are you asking me, like, as far as, like, how does propaganda factor in the creation of a cadre, or what role should propaganda play in your cadre as far as, you know, when you create it?
All of the above, because I'm saying, what role does propaganda play in cadre development? We understand it's the same thing you got to do to develop a cadre. A cadre can be single or plural. One person can be a cadre. Mm-hmm. Five people can be a cadre. You know, so what role would cadre play in regards to building that particular cadre? If you're building an individual cadre, or we're building a cadre as a group, a unit, or a cell, or a formation, what role would propaganda play in regards to organizing that, in order to building that, in order to creating a political line and creating a particular type of philosophy?
what role the propaganda play in that from your own experiences?
I got it. Actually, this is a question I ain't never really thought about, so I got to put some thought into this. What role does propaganda play in creating a cadre? I mean, one, when you create a cadre, it's extremely important that everybody is on the same page as far as your ideology is concerned. Everybody gotta have an understanding of the same thing. That don't mean you always gotta agree on everything, but you got to have your ideology tight. Because if you don't have your ideology tight, you don't really even know what you fight for. You know, you have individuals and organizations who don't really understand why they doing what they doing. You know what I'm saying? You have people who get, like I said, wrapped up in emotionalism and think, well, man, you know, we trying to fight. We trying to do, you know, what we doing so white people can treat us better or white people will love us. You know what I'm saying? Then the reality is whether white people love you or hate you, that ain't going to change the concrete conditions. They ain't going to change the system that is based on your exploitation. So it's like we all have to be on the same page as far as what we're fighting for, why we are fighting, all of these type of things. Another reason for that is so once you go out and you deal with the people, you ain't telling them all different type of things. We all on one accord, one page, one voice, and we're collectively stronger. Just like a magnifying glass, you know what I'm saying? You see the sun, it beaming everywhere. But you hit that magnifying glass, it concentrates the energy of the sun, and it focuses it on one area, and you're able to set a fire, you know what I'm saying, with the energy of the sun by focusing, you know, that energy like that. So it's like when you're on the same accord and you are preaching the same message when it come out to the people. You know, now the development of that, you know, you might have ideological struggle, you know, in the development, you know, of your ideology all day. But once you go out to the people, you got to be on the same page. You can't be confusing the people about, you know what I'm saying, what we trying to do, what, you know, why we trying to, you know, fight and why we trying to gain nationhood, you know. So, I mean, if you're going to get deeper into that, propaganda plays an important part in recruitment. You know what I'm saying? Because it's like this thing what we do. We'll go out to a program. We through the program, you know, for the purpose of educating the people, also attracting, you know, the right type of minds and analyzing their individual characters and personality to see if this is somebody that we would even be willing to introduce to our struggle. But like once a potential member is identified, based on whatever that personality, who it is, because like you might have somebody who is more of a street dude. Well, you know, we got members who were like over certain gangs. This is part of, you know, our unit. We might say, okay, yeah. Hey, you know, this is somebody who will gravitate towards you and stuff like that. Go talk to them, see where they headed. See, you know, analyze them. You know, bring them back. I might be somebody who, like, in college, you know, then they might send me and be like, okay, because, you know, I graduated from the University of Mississippi and did the whole collegiate thing. So they might resonate with me a little better. I might be a sister or, you know what I'm saying, whatever. But, you know, understanding how to deal with individuals and how to relate the information to individual is extremely important to recruitment. You know, and really it's important to help transform the minds of people, because you can have people who have a criminalistic mentality, and as George Jackson said, you know, crime, that's just like a first step of rebellion. That's like a rebellion. It's like you rebelling, you just don't know. Yeah, you don't know exactly what you're rebelling against. So, like, you know, just being able to articulate the struggle in a way that reaches that person and resonate with that person and make them see, damn, that's what's been going on with me, you know, all the time. That's really what I'm rebelling against. And to change their mentality toward, you know, the struggle to the point where they ready to come on in and contribute the effort to what we're trying to do. So, I mean, propaganda is important within everything, you know, from to how you develop your cadre to what you do when you go out and you deal with the people, how you deal with individuals, you know what I'm saying? It's really all propaganda, you know, because like you said, propaganda is basically just using information or platforms or whatever platform it is in order to influence people one way or the other, especially about organizations or movements or, you know, or whatever it is that you're trying to influence them on. So, yeah, propaganda is important within all that, cadre building, cadre work, and so forth.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, again, I want to thank Commentary Brock. I shared another one to stand, thinking of what you're going to do in the past, in the present, in the future, right? You know, at this time, I want to open up the lines for a couple of callers that can join the dialogue, ask questions, make statements, and so forth and so on, right? So at this time, I'm going to open up a call, a line, 901-609. You have any question, comment, or statement, or announcement, please do so at this time. Your line is open. 901-609. Go ahead. Your line is open.
Free the land. How y'all doing tonight?
Free the land.
Free the land, Queen.
Great, great, great show, man. Y'all did good, man. Y'all did good. I love it. Things on point. Learned a lot. And yeah, you still a rapper, cause you did my song for my show and inspired. I love my damn song. Well, y'all did a good show tonight, man. I enjoyed everything. You hear me? And I appreciate both of you comrades and everything y'all do in Free the Lane.
We appreciate you, Sister Melody Queen, for the propagation work that you're doing and informing and educating and inspiring what you're doing as well, sister. So your efforts are not recognized. We recognize your efforts as well, sister. So we appreciate you pushing forward.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that, y'all. Love y'all. All right. Free the lane.
Love you too, Queen.
At this time, if anybody got any question, comment, or statement, please press 1 and I pull you in. If you have any question, statement, or announcement, I want to join dialogue, press 1 and I pull you in. Go ahead, Conrad. What you was saying?
No, I was just saying, you know, that Melly Queen, man, she be putting in that work, man. She like an energizer bunny. She be keeping everything on point. I appreciate that sister so very much. She is so crucial and important to what we, you know, trying to do in Ida B. Wells City and especially Nava in general, you know. She's so vital. And like you said, you know, what we're doing is so important. It is so important. I can't understate that. You know what I'm saying? I can't overstate that. I can't overstate that.
It's imperative. It's imperative, yeah. for our survival. You know,
exactly.
Like you said, you know, in regards to everything, a war been going on. Everything we have is a war. Everything is a war in my land. You know, it don't matter if it's Crips and Blood. It don't matter if Muslims versus Christians. You know, it doesn't matter Democrats versus Republicans. It's always a war about land, which is the basic independence. Mm-hmm. So when you look at that aspect of things, the greatest tool in war here is propaganda. And we see that right now in regards to social media that have been utilized throughout time to social engineer the people's mind state so that they can think and act like the consumer, think like the oppressor, follow trend, things of that nature, because it's a social engineer process. You know, they're attacking a society that virtually imaginary, that exists in an imaginary world they want to call the conscious community that's located on the side of the internet, and they put in certain thoughts in their mind, psychologically conditioning, programming them to accept certain things that they want to accept and to deviate them from the true cause of what's going on, instead of using the tool as a method to influence and motivate and inspire and educate people in what you're doing with NABA. And you know what I'm saying, what you're doing in other broadcasts like Georgia University Radio and other platforms being utilized to control the narrative as much as possible where we get the opportunity to do so for strategic purposes, right? So that's a beautiful thing, man. You know, I got some more callers too as well. Hold on, let me open this line up for this other caller. 901-292. If you have any questions, comments, or statements, or announcements, please do us at the time. 901-292, the line is open. Go ahead.
See the land.
Vitamin, sir.
How you doing, Brother Romani? Good show tonight, Brother Prophecy. Always.
Oh, I'm
doing
well, so I'm strong.
Yeah. Good. Thank you for, you know, just asking those wonderful questions, because those are some serious questions. Brother Prophecy, you know, I have a couple of questions.
Say what now?
I have a couple of questions for you.
Okay.
I appreciate
okay.
Go ahead.
I appreciate
ahead,
everything.
Mom.
Okay. So, you know, Brother Prophecy, when you talk about the music trying to uplift our people through, because that the music, of course, is a form of propaganda, because they already understand that melanin produces sound, vibration, light,
mm-hmm.
and that is all
yep.
that we are. That is all that we mm-hmm. are. That's all we are. So when you speak about it's very, very necessary, and you've made a conscious effort to try to record positive music, do New African Center elevating videos and information, education, edutainment, as we call it. NABA is tasked with trying to pull together and to develop a network of those type of artists.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And how do you think it going to be beneficial for the nation, the Republic of New Africa?
I mean, it's going to be tremendously beneficial because it's so important. Because this is the reality. This is the reality. The music has been weaponized against us, and that ain't by accident. A lot of times people look at the artists be like, well, you know, they writing this stuff. For somebody who's been in the music industry, because once upon a time I was serious with it, basically it goes like this. I might come in with a conscious, inspiring, uplifting song. And I go to a record exec. And nowadays, the interesting thing is, you know, you don't have as many independent, strong rap companies like you did once upon a time when Master P and all them was doing it. But I come with a conscious song. So a record exec says, I'm sorry, it's not what we're looking for. I go back and I got to go get a job and struggle and just, you know, try to maintain life the best I can. You know, if I'm doing my music, I'm kind of doing it for love. I'm doing it for underground, and which you can make a way underground, especially nowadays. But you don't necessarily, mm-hmm. you don't necessarily have the backing of that big monster machine that's putting, you know, money in your pockets and money behind your product, you know what I'm saying? And I contrast that with, you know, the next person who come along. They are rapping about disrespecting women. They rapping about selling drugs, taking drugs nowadays, killing your fellow brother, glorifying murder. And they say, yeah, that's definitely what I'm looking for. I'm going to give you $1 million signing bonus. I'm going to put this X amount of money behind your product, and all of a sudden your life changes. So when you look at the two examples, the next person who come along, are they going to do the inspirational song? Are they going to do the conscious rap? Are they going to do something that is self-destructive? You know, well, just natural selection will dictate that you're going to follow what is successful. So if what is being promoted, what is getting resources, what is changing people's lives is something that is negative, something that is destructive within the people, then that's what's gonna spread. So it ain't no accident that our music has been weaponized against us. So that's why we individuals who are trying to do something positive, we have to create avenues for positive conscious rappers to be heard, because they're out there,
yeah.
But it's just the nature of the system is actually producing the negativity, because that's where the resources are going. So we got to be able to create platforms that they can come and they can shine and they can do all these things and they can be heard and they can be glorified just like they glorified the things that are self-destructive within our community. So yeah, it's not just a benefit for the nation. Well, it's a benefit for the new African nation, whether you are a conscious citizen or unconscious citizen. Because right now, the weaponization of our music is destructive within our community. I mean, we'll have a funeral of a young person and we'll say how great of a person was, and it's a tragedy that he was taken away from us in such a brutal and violent way, and then jump into the car, turn on the music, and somebody rapping about the very thing that just happened to the brother. And we bobbing our heads to it. Yeah, you drove up to the car and bust the cap in and blah, blah. And that's the very same thing that you're crying about. So, I mean, this type of thinking is really the product of a social engineering program and really a self-destructive propaganda program that's really twisted our minds inside out. So we thinking in a way that is counterproductive and really self-destructive and against our own self-interest. And whenever you see a people in that condition, that means, you know, it's been a serious social engineering program done on them. So, like, exactly. We got to get people's mind by any and all means, you know, because if we ain't thinking correctly, if we're not able to respond correctly to the things that are threatening us in our own community, then it's going to be real difficult for us to liberate ourselves from this beast. So, you know what I mean? We just got work to do.
Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Since your training is, you are a scientist, historical, material dialectician, and an analyst, because that's your training. You've been on this path, as you say, a very long time. When we talk about setting up the strategy of work, study, train, how important is it when we're in our collectives, in our units, in our study groups, in our book clubs, to introduce and to train ourselves in criticism, self-criticism?
that's a great. I actually think that whenever you set up a unit, one of the first areas of study is how to give and receive criticism and self-criticism, because it's extremely important, because most people don't understand that the purpose of criticism and self-criticism, especially criticism, is to make your organization better, to make you better, to make everything that you're doing better. It ain't to bring you down. It's not to hurt your feelings or anything like that. But I mean, we have not been trained to be critical thinkers. That's one thing about the public education system that's really devastating. They don't teach us how to think. They teach us what to think. So we don't understand how to analyze things on a critical level. So when it comes to things like criticism, we get in our emotions. We get in our feelings. And some of us don't even understand how to give criticism. You know, we don't understand how to give criticism because we get in our emotions, too. We see something and we like, man, what the hell wrong with your stupid ass? Blah, you know what I'm saying? All these type of things. And all of that is destructive. It ain't designed to build you up. And everything that we're trying to do is designed to make us better. That's why, you know, anytime you see me on a broadcast, I have no problem whatsoever with anybody disagreeing with me. I welcome it, because a disagreement is an opportunity for two individuals to come to a higher level of understanding. You know, if you are politically mature enough to deal with it, if you understand criticism, self-criticism, if you understand how to be like, well, you know, your thoughts on this, what about thinking about it this way? You know what I'm saying? What about this? You know, if you're able to question somebody in a respectful way, in a constructive way. And if you're able to actually objectively reflect on, you know, what's being questioned and objectively, you know, ponder, do they have a point? You know what I'm saying? Is their analysis on point? Is it something that I'm missing? You know? So, but that requires us to remove our ego out of the equation, because, you know, the part of the self, which is the ego, is designed to protect you. So when you feel that you're being attacked and your ego kicked in and said, no, I'll protect you, you. I got to defend myself against this attack. So you got to be able to have your ego in check. So when somebody is having a constructive criticism, you receiving that is, oh, this is an opportunity for me to grow. So like I said, that's like the first class I would ever do, you know, within setting up a unit, is how to receive and take in or give constructive criticism. I yield.
Okay. A final question. Is that okay, Bomani, or do I need to get off?
Yeah, it's okay, so go ahead. It's okay. It's all good. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So when you, prophecy, when you are analyzing, there's so many questions, but it's okay. The perspective in which you're coming from through film, radio, whatever venue we want, how is propaganda going to encourage our people to begin to, I just want to pick education, begin to consider African-centered education, begin to consider forming collectives? How can propaganda be used to encourage that particular type of thinking?
Okay, I'll answer it like this. I think that's $1 million question. Not just education, but anything that we do, because that's kind of what we're tasked with. That's kind of what we have to tackle, because we have to continue to really do a self-analysis on how we're dealing with the people. You know what I'm saying? Because we got to continue to find creative ways to reach the people. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what we're trying. That's what we're aiming for. I think sometimes, depending on our audience, sometimes we can go over our people's head. You know what I'm saying? Because I get that a lot. You know, because like just the regular people who are not conscious citizens, you know, they kind of look at me like, I don't know, you know what I'm saying? Because it's like almost like we're over their head a little bit. So we have to continue to figure out ways to meet the people where they are. You know what I'm saying? That's one reason why, you know, I'm started to try to pick up on topics that people are generally talking about anyway. You know, like when Kanye West and Kyrie was you know, being persecuted for their comments about, you know, Jewish people. I was like, well, everybody's talking about that. Let's talk about that, but let's put a new African perspective in it, and let's show it, you know, from our perspective, give them a different perspective so we can draw them into that conversation. But when they're drawing into that conversation, they get something that they're not necessarily expecting. So we have to really, I mean, that's a daily task, and we got to really, you know, be humble and examine ourselves, see, okay, how can I do this better? How can I be more effective at reaching the people? Because what we're doing is extremely important. It's extremely important for, you know, not only ourselves, but really the livelihood of our whole race, really, you know? So, yeah, we have to get, and we really got to, target, you know, young people. I really want to pull young people in there. I mean, I host on a lot of shows simply because I just, you know, I can do it. But I really don't want to, because naturally I'm a shy brother. You know, I'm a quiet, shy dude. You know, I'm accustomed to being behind the camera, you know, letting everybody else shine. So it's like I really, really want, you know, to get younger people who are, you know, better at expressing themselves to other young people, you know, because, you know, I ain't just no spring chicken no more. But yeah, so that's really the task that we're handed, is, you know, finding different ways to reach the people and be effective with it, as effective as possible. And I yield.
Thank you so much, Bomani. This is a good show. I enjoyed the conversation and the information always. Thank you.
No doubt. Free the land. At this time, we have another caller. I'm about to open your lines. 901-570. If you have any questions, comments, or statements, or announcements at this time, please do so. 901-570. Your line is open. Go ahead.
Well, Cedar Lynn. Cedar Lynn.
Cedar Lynn.
This is Sister Sama Ike. I have been enjoying the last part of this particular show. It's phenomenal. Thank you so much, Brother Bomani, Minister Bomani. Thank you so much, Brother Prophecy. I have a particular question, Brother Prophecy, that is like scratching me in the middle of my back, right?
Okay.
Can you expound on the ways and means in which we can cultivate as the African, as consciously African, more commitment and consistency?
Ways that we can cultivate more commitment and what?
Consistency.
Consistency. Ooh-wee, that's a good question right there. That's, you know, I think I'd be rich if I just knew the answer, you know, how I could magically abracadabra do that. Because that's one of the things that I know units and cadres just struggle with. But I think really, you know, Madam President, when y'all implement work, training, and study, that's really a key. Because a lot of times people don't necessarily have the commitment that you need because they're still indoctrinated into other things. They don't really they haven't really grabbed hold to the ideology. You know, they don't really understand exactly what it is that we actually fighting for and the seriousness of it. So it's like when you are trained and you are educated and you understand exactly the importance and the gravity of what we're doing, you know, it's like you kind of your outlook on things are different. You know what I'm saying? Because like that's one thing that I've just noticed just talking to different new Africans, people who say they're conscious. It's like the ideology has a tendency to be kind of everywhere. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, you know, and I'm thinking, you know how we came up, we studied specific things, you know, and we had to know these specific things. And when I go out and I'll be like, okay, y'all ain't study, you ain't studying this, or you ain't, you know what I'm saying? It'd be confusing me. And it's like if everybody don't have the ideology tight, you know, then it's gonna be hard for everybody to be on the same page, not only just with what you're struggling for, but what we all need to be doing and the level of commitment and all of those type of things come with that. You know what I'm saying? Come with the buying into what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? Because in order to be committed to something, you gotta buy into it completely. You know, and that's what, you know, that's what the U.S. propaganda makes you do. It makes you buy into things that are destructive to you, you know, and we have to be honest about ourselves being in the bowels of this imperialistic nation. We have to understand that every day we have to go through the process of deprogramming ourselves from this system. And if you, you know, when you come into a unit, or you just say, well, hey, I wanna join the struggle, then, and you have not been completely deprogrammed, or you don't even realize you need to be deprogrammed, then a lot of those ways gonna creep up, you know, on you, you know. So, you know, and a lot of people, you know, you gotta examine why you're doing this, because people do things for different reasons. You know, some people do things because they caught up in emotionalism. You know, somebody got killed by the police and they're mad and they want to do something about it now, but they haven't made a real commitment to establishing an independent sovereign nation. You know, it's an understanding that a nation ain't going to be just developed overnight. We're in a protracted struggle. That means it's going to go over a long period of time in our jobs right now. And I think that's something that we probably need to make more clear. The fact that our job right now at this particular stage of development is to, you know, update the blueprint to push forth with our own independent institution as much as we can and leave it for the youth to pick up. In each generation's job and responsibility is to push the needle farther and farther and farther till we ultimately make that qualitative leap into nationhood. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, you know, because it's kind of one of them questions is not an easy answer to because – you know, that's something that we struggle with. It always seems like it's always a few committed individuals, you know, like you, of course, I've been, you know, knowing you for, I don't even know how long nowadays. And, you know, both of us always been on the same thing ever since we known each other, you know, and I could tell, you know, Brother Bomani the same way, he always been on the same thing, you know, everybody's not in the struggle for the same reason. So our educational program has to kind of really indoctrinate you into the movement. That's kind of, the, you know, what it has to do. It has to, you know, get you locked in and bought into the movement, you know, because, like, that's kind of what it happened with us when we was with the general. You know, when we was listening and understanding, you know, what he was doing, it was just like, dang, okay, it's clear. This is what we need to be doing, period. So I don't know if I answered your question or not, but, you know, it's kind of a difficult question. I ain't going to lie.
No, because we are New African social scientists. Like, we have to move with the times. And as mm-hmm. we analyze our movements and as we analyze present day, now being many, many decades into integration and how it has literally transmuted and transformed the terrain, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The physical, spiritual, psychological terrain of what we're dealing with amongst our people, you know, because now the lines are extremely blurred,
mm-hmm.
you know, and
yeah.
so can, and you know, we got to come up with brilliant ways and means of combating these blurred lines, because that's really what it is. In terms of these commitment levels and consistency levels that we're looking at, you know, and of course, you know, we comprehend having to handle certain particular responsibilities. Yet at
mm-hmm.
the same time, to add to that, this is life or death that we're talking
yeah.
about. And every time we do not commit, every time we do not show up when we say we're gonna show up. It's like we promoting our democracy. You know what I'm saying? And to me that urgency is not there. You know what I'm saying? Across the major. So how do you think, from your perspective as a social scientist, what are some of the things that we as new African citizens, consciously African citizens that are committed, what are some of the things that we are going to have to implement to assist these
okay.
new findings?
Okay. All right. Okay. I get it. All right. So I don't think that's something unique to our struggle, because in a lot of movements, probably most movements, you have a committed few that's always holding it down and pushing forward and putting in the work. And ultimately, it leads to a stage of development where everybody else kind of jumps on the bandwagon when you get things moving. So what we have to do, those individuals who are committed to this struggle, we have to basically be in the meetings who analyze the situation and say, okay, these are the things that need to be done. These are the things that we need to set up and put things in motion. And everybody else who just riding the train, want to jump on the train, are going through emotionalism, we just give them things to do. You know what I'm saying? We set up the blueprint, and then we just, you know, be like, okay, I need you to do this. I need you to do that. I need you to do this, because everybody's not designed to be a leader. You know what I'm saying? You can go into work training study, and you can learn leadership skills. But if we just looking at opening it up to the masses and expecting everybody to be as committed to Osama Ott or Brother Bomani, then we just setting ourselves up for disappointment. So what we got to do is we just got to set up things for people to do. Be like, all right, you good at building stuff? I need you to build this. You know, you good at fixing things? I need you to fix this. You know what I'm saying? You good at speaking? You good at talking? I need you to talk about this. You know, specifically those specific things. And that way we will be utilizing our resources in a more efficient and effective way. Because like if we're like sometimes we putting, I don't want to say too much faith into people, but I mean that's just kind of like, you know, it's always been a situation where you have like certain individuals who are committed regardless to what's going to happen, and then you have a lot of other individuals who are committed when it's really rolling, when things are rolling, and they be like, oh, it's a cool thing to do, and, you know, you get wrapped up into the emotionalism of the moment. And really studying how people move and what motivates people and all of that type of thing, understanding the psychology of the people. You know, these type of things have to be employed when you're trying to lead people from point A to point B, you know, understanding the tools and tactics that generals use in war, you know, to motivate, you know, your soldiers, you know, and, you know, not to get too deep in the thing, but General Hamisha used to do with us all the time, you know, but I say ultimately we got to set up things for us. We got to set up programs. We got to set up the institutions and be like, hey, you like to teach? Is that what you want to do? You be a teacher? Okay, I need you to teach this. You know, you like to grow stuff? I need you to grow this. I need you to build this. I need you to do, you know, put this over there. You know, hammer this into here. You know, give them specific directions, you know, and we be the conductor of the ship until we gain more and more momentum till we can collect more committed individuals, you know what I'm saying, and, you know, kind of create it like that. That's, you know, that's off the top of my head. That's how I would approach things.
Thank you so much, Brother Prophecy. Thank you so much, Brother Bomani. I yield back.
All right. We thank you. Thank you, sister, for the work you're doing. Appreciate it. I got another call. 11111, your line is open. You're in question, comment, or statements at your time. Your line is open. 11111. Might be Conrad Freedom. Hey, Conrad Freedom.
Right on, Bomani. Appreciate it. Appreciate it, Conrad. I'm glad I'm tuned in. You know, I thought it was an excellent choice of a guest tonight. You know, because we've been caught hanging out on his platform a few times, so it's only right that he get over here and hang out with us a little bit. And
it's a pleasure.
Yes, sir. You better believe it, bro. The pleasure's over here. I mean, I've been kind of pushing you. You know, I don't know what it is. Sometimes I hate to even say this, but I've got to be honest. It's a combination of training, and it's a combination of personalities with you and Atiba. Y'all both got the training, clearly got the ideology correct, but it's a clicking, it's a meshing together that to me is gives the audience a chance to really, you know, get into some political education in a fun and loving way. I mean, that's just, that's that conversation with comrades just drew me in like that. So let me just be honest out front, a brother to brother, man to man. That's what it was. But in terms, when I first got into the political prisoner work, I was kind of trained on propaganda in terms of just carrying stuff with you. In fact, one of the comrades used to always dump card. She always had these cards, propaganda cards with like whoever political prison, Mumia, you know, Mutulu, somebody's face and information on the card and on the back, contact, so on and so forth. And that was kind of like a guerrilla type of propaganda on the streets, wherever you go, at work, in a store, you know. And I found last summer in promoting Black August, that is, because I got back to it last summer in my own kind of way. I started printing up my own stuff, going out, and it's effective. It's very effective. I understand Zoom and technology is here today, podcasts, so on and so forth. It's a wonderful thing to have. But I still think that guerrilla art on the street, hand-to-hand, face-to-face, people-to-people type of propaganda is still an effective tool.
Yes, sir.
But what I wanted to ask you, maybe you can deal with this question, and could, you know, I think you're wise and you have the wisdom to deal with this question. It used to turn a lot of people off, especially sisters, when we would bring them in. We go on the streets handing out cards and placards and stuff, and they would, to the meetings that's, you know, we advertise or whatever, and they come to the PE classes and so on and so forth, and they get busy, as you were saying earlier. We would put them to work. Can you, if you're good at the computer, if you're good at sending out large group emails or whatever the case may be, you put them to work. And the sisters did a hell of a job. I mean, a lot of them, man, just made mm-hmm. the cadre that we were building work so well. It just amazed me. But the thing that always pissed me off, and you can answer this in any kind of way you like, was certain brothers with this thing that mainstream calls patriarchy. I don't even like to use the word patriarchy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, just their, you know, misogynist, power-struck kinds of way would run these sisters up out the cadre. They wanted to control them to a certain degree. And even when we did criticism, self-criticism, for some reason, I take responsibility here too, we didn't drive it hard enough on those that we saw in leadership that were acting that way towards the sisters, because they wouldn't act that way towards the brothers. One brother would, I'm not going to mention any names, but just can you deal with that or answer that kind of thing, how to protect the cadre, how to protect the nation, building the nation going forward from these types of personalities, if you will, destructive personalities?
Man, first of all, I got to say something to you, comrade. Man, I love it when you be on the show, comrade. Man, like, because, see, you have a way of challenging people in the correct way. You know what I'm saying? Like literally, you challenge the way people think. And like I said, I like when people, you know, don't necessarily always go along with everything, but you got like a slick way. I don't want to, slick is not a word because it sounds derogatory, but you have a very clever and effective way of just asking a question to make you think and put your mind in a different perspective and think about things from a different angle. You know what I'm saying? And I want to say, like, personally, I appreciate that, man. You like, if I'm picking, like, okay, I need a dream team of people who around me, Freedom Power, you're going to be one of the top three draft choices. You know what I'm saying? So thank you, brother, for you know, everything you're doing. And like all during the week, I be going through the social media and I see, oh, man, this comrade dropping these dope questions. You know what I'm saying? How to protect ourselves from these destructive personalities. And I mean, from my perspective, first thing, we gotta take a scientific approach to it. So we have to identify those things that are destructive, like individuals who are misogynistic. And, you know, mistreating our women, not treating them fairly, you know, with this European male chauvinist way of thinking, mindset that they have adopted, and they are putting it into what we're doing. First thing is we have to identify those things concretely, and this has to be implemented into our program. It's like one of the first things that I will implement is a class on criticism, self-criticism. The reason why I say that is because a lot of people fall out because they're trying to be criticized and they can't take it, or either they're being criticized in a destructive way and not a constructive way. And I've seen like a lot of units that just fall apart over that alone. So I would say in the very beginning stages, that is something that you emphasize. So those things that you identify that are problems, if male chauvinism is a problem, especially, you know, how you know, you see it, things go so well, especially when you put the sisters in certain, you know, positions and they excel in it and it does such a great job for your unit, your cadre, then, I mean, the first time that destroys or negatively affects what you're doing, because what you're doing is so important, you know, because like what we're doing is really important. We got to treat it like that. We got to guard it like that. So once we identify that, then we have to, like, from the beginning, we have to put in certain things, like even if it's,
training from the beginning, from the get-go. You know, if it's policies that we got to implement from the get-go, from up top, then we got to put the necessary energy behind it, and we got to make sure that there are the appropriate consequences for violating these things, and that we'll treat it with a certain amount of seriousness. We got to give it the proper energy that it deserves. You know what I'm saying? Because a lot of times, you know, we might talk about some, but we don't necessarily are consistent with things. You know, something might happen, and, well, you know, I let it go, and, you know, let it go, and then before you know, a whole lot of little things become a big thing, you know. So it's like, number one, identifying what those things are, those behaviors are, and then you either, if it's creating certain consequences for those behaviors or actions, or if it's creating certain educational tools or classes that teach people, like, this is how we do things specifically, like from an ABC, breaking it down to its elementary levels. Because, like, if a person is not aware of the behavior, then, you know, it's going to be hard for you to tell them to stop doing it when they don't realize they're doing something wrong. You know, awareness is a big part of it, you know, because a lot of people just do things because they've been indoctrinated into doing it, and they just think that's the natural way things are supposed to be done. So, you know, we got to educate people on exactly what's going on, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, why. You know, we got to give them that proper education, that proper training, and then we have to implement consequences. Because in a war, art of war, Sun Tzu said people's behaviors are dictated by or are influenced by reward and punishment. You know, you reward that desirable behavior, and you punish that undesirable behavior. I mean, it kind of sound elementary, and it kind of sound bad, but that's the way, like, human beings are actually trained the way everything else is. If you do something and you get a reward for it, you continue to do it. If you do something and something bad happened, then you're like, okay, I don't need to do that no more. You know what I'm saying? And you know, any kind of, you know, kind of, I know they kind of sound bad because I'm almost reducing human beings to, like, that's how you train a dog or something like that. But, you know, all of these tactics and techniques, we got to employ. And especially when we see something that is working within our particular unit, our cadre, we got to make sure that it's not self-sabotaged by somebody who just got the wrong mindset. So and we just got to treat that thing. We got to treat these cadres, these units, as if they are babies, and I'm not going to let nobody fuck it up, you know, because the work that we're doing is just too important for an individual ego, or individual with a European mindset, or principles that ain't up to par to come mess it up, you know. I yield with that. I don't know if I answered Excellent. Your question or not.
Yes, sir. I mean, you might have over-asked. No, you can't over-answer, but I'd like to let that stand. I'll let everyone listening, if you heard that answer there, you're building a cadre, if you happen to be in that process. Yes, sir. It's very, very wise words to establish that from the get-go. And I think that has been part of the problem in my area, where I've come into cadres or organizations that are already established, and you don't have any of that. It becomes a personality kind of a, you know, oh, he's leader, he's chairman, or he's this, you know. So absolutely 100% right. Establish it from the get-go and take it so serious that the consequences, you know, will be a deterrent. So exactly. Not anybody else from somewhere else go, hey, brother, hey, man, let me just say this before I roll out, man. Let's see. Millie Queen, Sa, and Mama Ayo, all them sisters, man, every time, every show that I get a chance to, and they tag me, which is something fabulous, man. I'm like, damn, I wouldn't even remember the times, or, you know, your day be so busy. But they on it, man. And I really do appreciate what they do to keep me connected to NABA. So I'm going to let it go right there. All of y'all, whoever's listening, and tell somebody who ain't listening, I appreciate y'all.
Hey, I appreciate you. One more thing I will say about what you was talking about, where we was talking about establish these consequences and this study from the get-go. In your cadre, you should always be re-examining yourself, you know, like what can we do better? Like criticism, self-criticism is something that should happen, is an ongoing process. Like whenever we do something, we should go back and say, okay, we did these things well. These things we didn't do so well, how can we make that better? So therefore, you're always growing. Growth is a continuous thing. It ain't never to the point where you get one place and you stay right there at that level. You're always trying to become a better version of who you are and what you are as far as being an individual or a collective organization. And I yield on that.
Right on. Gorilla love. That's perfect. Perfect.
Okay. Part of self, you know, we got less than 5 minutes left. Can you give your final thought, Brother Prophecy, what you want to leave with your final thoughts?
Oh yeah, of course. First and foremost, thank you, Comrade Bomani, for letting me on the show. I ain't gonna lie, I'll be listening to the show and I'll be like, man, I wish y'all somebody invite me to the show. I love to be on. But thank you for inviting me, giving me the opportunity to be on the show without having to produce it. And thank you for the work that you're doing, more importantly. And to everybody out there, thank everybody for enjoying, for participating in NABA and everything in the George Jackson University and all of the new African broadcasts and publications. And understand, we have fun on these broadcasts. We talk, you know, that good black-ish and have a good old time, but it don't stop with us talking. You know what I'm saying? We got to make that talk, them words into actions, and them actions into institutions, and the institutions into nation. You know what I'm saying? Because we're engaged in the process of nation building. And like, you know, we always say, one way or another, you're going to be building a nation. Do you want to build a nation that disrespects you, that oppresses you, that brutalizes you, that exploits you for the benefit of themselves? Or do you want to build a nation that we can leave to our children a legacy that ain't about the exploitation and all of those negative things that we've been suffering from? You know what I'm saying? Like I said, thank you, Bomani. I appreciate this. You know, much love, you know, to you and everybody out there.
No doubt, brother. You're welcome, brother. Hey, we got to all remember just one thing. Just do the work. That's it.
Do the work. Damn right.
That's it. That's it. You know, my final words is, anyone got any Conrad, Lil Wayne, Close Associates, please look at the Georgia University. We have various social media handles on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook on the Georgia University. We're currently in the midst of creating a new website, and we also can be contacted through our email, which is georgejacksonuniversity71@gmail.com. Again, it's georgejacksonuniversity71@gmail.com, or you can contact me directly, Bumani Shakir. I am the active spokesperson of Georgia University. I'm Georgia University radio host, but I'm also the vice chancellor. You can contact me well on social media if need to be. I'm going to say long live resistance, long live new African independent movement, and long live the guerrilla. Real
land. Free the land. By any means necessary.
Yes, sir.